Everyone, and welcome to Demimonde Paranormal, your place to go to listen to all things creepy and terrifying, and more importantly, all things supernatural. This includes famous hauntings, witchcraft, dark history, cryptids, UFOs, you name it, all things paranormal, it's right here on Demimonde Paranormal. As usual, I'm your host, Tori, and in tonight's episode, we are going to be taking a look at 10 of the most terrifying entities in folklore in this Halloween special. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Demimonde Paranormal. In tonight's episode, as I said earlier, we are going to be covering 10 of some of the most terrifying entities in folklore and mythology. I had to narrow it down to 10 because if I didn't, we'd be here all night, all the way until Halloween. So, to make things a little bit lighter and to make it a little bit more special, I decided to narrow the list down to some of the most obscure or a little bit more obscure entities that you may or may not have heard of. So join me, won't you, as we dive in deep into the more creepy things that dwell in the dark. And before we dive right in, I just want to take a minute and ask you guys, how are you doing? How is the autumn season treating you? And I hope you guys are having a great spooky season. If you're here in America, like myself, I wish you a happy Halloween. And don't be afraid to drop a comment telling me what is your favorite thing about Halloween. And also, what's your favorite candy or snack that you may receive on Halloween? Or take from your kids' trick-or-treat bags when they're not looking. So, without any further ado, I'm going to dive right into something you may or may not have heard of. Now, our first entity on our list for tonight's episode comes from ancient Greece. This child-devouring creature is known as the Lamia. Now, Lamia was a child-devouring sea monster, or a night-haunting demon. She was the daughter of Poseidon, and the mother of the monsters Scylla and Achilles, the shark. Now, originally, Lamia was a Libyan queen who was loved by Zeus. But when his jealous wife Hera learned about their affair, she stole away Lamia's children. And so, Lamia was driven mad with grief, and she tore out her own eyes. Zeus then transformed her into a monster, allowing her to exact revenge by devouring the children of others. Now, Lamia was often described as a boogeyman, or a demon that haunts the night, which particularly preyed on children. She is also described as a host of ghostly vampiric entities or elements. Now, Lamia was first envisaged as a sea-dwelling monster, as she was the daughter of Poseidon, and her name was simply the ancient Greek word for a large, dangerous, lone shark. She was probably identified as the sea goddess Keto, for both are described as the mother of monster Scylla and her other child Achilles, which means the lipless one, who was indeed transformed into a small shark by Aphrodite. So that was our first entity for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Also, if you have any interesting entities that you would like to talk about, don't be afraid to leave a comment down below when I drop tonight's episode. I would love to hear about all different ghosts and ghouls from all around the world. So next stop on our list comes all the way from the United States, the Southwest United States. Now this is a creature that you may or may not have heard of. A pretty famous creature, but all the most creepy and terrifying. This is the Skinwalker. Now, how many of you guys have ever heard of the Skinwalker or heard stories from other people talking about a creature that they couldn't exactly explain? Or maybe you've never heard of this entity. Well, tonight you will. Now, the Skinwalker is of Native American origin, and its story varies from tribe to tribe, from the Navajo to the Hopi to the Mohawk. Now, the Skinwalker is a human who is able to shapeshift into various animal forms through witchcraft, essentially. Now, these people are usually shaman or medicine men, and Skinwalkers are generally considered very frightening, obviously, dangerous, difficult to kill, and most importantly, very evil. A Skinwalker is usually described as naked except for a coyote skin or a wolf skin. Some Navajos describe them as a mutated version of the animal in question. The skin may just be a mask, like those who are an only garment worn by the witches sing. These Skinwalkers are described as being fast, agile, and impossible to catch. Although some attempts have been made to shoot or kill one, but they are not usually successful. Now, needless to say, Skinwalkers sometimes transform themselves into animals simply for the purpose of traveling at great distances quickly. They may transform in order to wreak havoc on others, as the entity will be hidden, and they will be able to escape quickly if necessary, such as some Skinwalkers can turn themselves into a crow or a fox, something that can skid away very quick. The Skinwalker typically wears the pelt of the animal he or she can usually turn into, with no other clothing, of course. Because their association with Skinwalkers and animal hides are taboo in Navajo culture and is rarely seen. One Navajo writer said, "They curse people and cause great suffering and death. At night their eyes glow red like hot coals. It is said that if you see the face of one, they will have to kill you. And if you see one and know who it is, they will die. If you see them and you don't know them, they will have to kill you to keep you from finding out who they are. They use a mixture of some call corpse powder, which they blow into your face. Your tongue turns black and you go into convulsions, and you eventually die. They are known to use evil spirits at their ceremonies." Now, all people of the Navajo culture have learned to protect themselves against this evil creature. And they are also always on guard. So, there used to be a TV show called Lost or Found Footage, I believe. Lost Tapes. And they made an episode focusing in on the Skinwalker. And now, these were fake tapes, of course. But They made an episode focusing on the folklore of a skinwalker, and I remember watching it for the first time, and I could not get it out of my head. I thought it was so creepy. And I've read about them ever since, and they've been terrifying. But tell me, if you live in the south part of the United States, let me know if you ever heard stories or if you've ever had an encounter with a said skinwalker. On to our next part. This entity comes all the way from Ireland, and this creature may be quite familiar to you. This is what is called a Dullahan. Now, the Dullahan, or the Dark Man, is considered to be a dark fairy, particularly active in some remote parts of Ireland. According to legend, the Dullahan is a harbinger of death who appears mostly during certain festivals and feast days. Traditionally, this creature is depicted as a headless horseman with his decomposing head in one arm and a whip fashioned out of a human spine in the other. His eyes are said to be lit by a hellfire-ish fire, and his cloak and horse are darker than darkness itself. Although the Dullahan is often illustrated as a headless horseman, sometimes he is depicted as a headless man riding a creepy black coach. This coach is said to be a silent coach which accompanies a banshee. The Dullahan's coach is pulled by four or six black horses, and some claim that it even has a coffin mounted in the back. It doesn't get much more grim than that, does it? So, while a banshee only warns people of their death, it's said that the Dullahan is the one doing the killing. Interestingly enough, banshees only target specific families, while the Dullahan can condemn virtually anyone to death. And that is essentially the Irish version of the Headless Horseman. So that brings me to another thought. What is your favorite Halloween story that is made up, whether it be the Legend of Sleepy Hollow or any other creepy, spooky, classic Halloween tale? Let me know down in the comments. All right, moving on. Our next entity that we're going to be talking about is the aforementioned Banshee. And I don't mean the TV show. Now, the Banshee, or the Woman of the Fairies, is a supernatural being in Irish and other Celtic folklore, whose mournful keening, or wailing, screaming, or lamentation at night was believed to foretell death of a family member of the family of the person who heard the spirit. In Ireland, banshees were believed to warn only families of pure Irish descent, meaning you could not be mixed with anything else other than Irish blood. So, the Banshee is also known as the Little Washerwoman, or the Hag of the Black Head, or Hag of the Mist, among many other names. So, this creature known as the Banshee is a fairy woman who is a spirit linked to the realm of the dead, And if you spot her, you'd be praying for the safety of your family, because it is likely that one of them is soon going to be doomed to join her in the realm of the dead. The name itself, Banshee, is derived from the old Irish word for woman of the fairy mound. Her name is connected to the various mounds of earth dotted around the Irish countryside known as the Tamoli. These Tamoli traditionally covered a grave or a number of graves and were said to be home of spirits of the dead. The little washerwoman comes from tales of her being sighted washing blood stains from the clothes of individuals who were soon to die. Even if you don't spot her, the Banshee could signal her arrival by, as we said before, the ominous shrieking, wailing, or keening. Her shrieking was said to be able to shatter glass. Now, the first accounts of this creature date back as far as 1380, and mentions of the Banshee can even be found in some Norman literature from the time. There are also similar tales of witch-like creatures signaling impending doom in Scottish and Welsh mythology as well. Now, the Banshee would typically appear in three forms, either a young maiden, often to lure people towards her with her sweet singing, similar to that of mermaids in their siren songs, or a full-figured matron or an old wretched crone. Whether her form, she would be dressed in a gray cloak and her eyes were permanently red due to constant weeping. She was a predictor of death and would often appear before someone entered a situation where it was unlikely that they would come out alive. There are old tales of battles being abandoned by soldiers because of hearing wailing in the woods just before tussling with their enemies. Terrified by the thought of the Banshee signaling their impending death, they would flee. Fleeing soldiers would usually be killed by their enemies, their own armies, for desertion, or simply by the elements if they had stayed in their hiding. And with every death, the legend of the Banshee would grow and grow. Shrieks from the forest were never pleasant, even in the 21st century, with our now rational minds. But whenever you hear a blood-curdling howl, there is welcome that you or your loved ones would be in the arms of death if you can imagine the Banshee quickly becoming one of the most feared and featured creatures in Irish folklore. So tell me, everybody, have you ever seen or heard the wail of the Banshee? Let me know down in the comments. Let's see, who's next on our list? And once again, I take you guys to America again. This is an entity known as the Ghost Witch from the Mi'kmaq Native American tribes, among other Native American tribes as well. Now, what I have for you guys right here is more of a story explaining what the Ghost Witch is. So let me begin. Once, in days long since past, an old sorcerer of some note died of old age. In his long, unnatural life, he had become a vindictive and petty man. Any slight, real or imagined, was repaid tenfold. In his day, he became feared all throughout the Dawnlands. When he passed away, there were no friends or colleagues to attend to his body. What few relatives he had only wrapped him in blankets and placed his body in an old, gnarled tree deep in the heart of a black forest. In time, the forest became a place of dread. People saw strange things fleeting in and out of the trees on moonlit nights. Hunters heard terrible sounds echoing from the burial grove. Eventually, men and women came to shun the whole unwholesome place altogether. Now, several years later, a Mi'kmaq man and his wife were traveling through the lands on their way to the east. They did not know many people in those parts, so instead of asking for a night's lodging, they decided to sleep under the stars, looking for a good place to spend the night. They saw the old forest and stepped foot into that dark grove. When they entered, a chill took a hold of the wife, and she questioned her husband about the night's stay. He merely laughed at his wife's fears and attributed them to superstition. The husband selected a large tree and built a small lean-to. He then prepared a fire and cooked their supper. When their supper was over, the wife carefully studied their surroundings. It was winter, and most of the trees were bare. Dark and twisted branches seemed to stretch out and claw at the moon. Looking up, the wife saw dark shapes hanging amongst the trees. When she questioned her husband, he sleepily replied, "They're only the bodies of the deceased, but you shouldn't fear the dead. It's the living out here in the weird world that we have to be mindful of. Come, it's time to sleep. We shouldn't be here. I think we had better leave now," replied the wife. The husband merely laughed at his wife, and then rolled over to his side and fell asleep. The wife sat staring at the crackling fire and wished with all her might that she and her husband were far away and anywhere but here. The night air had grown heavy, and it seemed to the wife that the eyes of the dark forest were upon her. At last, she too lay down beside the fire, but she could not sleep. As the night stretched on, the fire burned down with two glowing embers. She gently prodded her husband, but he did not respond. She did not dare to get up to gather firewood to this dark place, so she wrapped herself in her blanket and shut her eyes. It was not long after she began to hear a gnawing sound. At first, she convinced herself it wasn't merely the old tree rubbing against each other in the wind, or maybe it was a small animal gnawing at the bones on one of the dead. The wife stayed awake the entire time and quietly listened to the strange grating sound that seemed to be lasting for hours. Just when it seemed that she could take no more of the gnawing, it stopped. The wife breathed a sigh of relief and noted that the brightening eastern sky as dawn approached slowly. The wife reached out to wake her husband, but he did not stir, so she let him be. When the sun's golden rays had finally banished the shadows of the old forest, the wife roughly shook her husband by his shoulder. To her horror, she rolled him to his back and saw a face frozen in fear. He was dead, and the left side of his chest was ruined in a mass of blood and viscera. The wife screamed and screamed and screamed, half mad with terror. She then ran with all her might to a lodge of the and she tried to tell her story, but her words were incoherent and jumbled. The Abenaki were at first thought she were mad, but they were gentle and tried to best calm her nerves. Eventually, the wife was able to tell the gathering of her harrowing tale. Many would not believe her. The story was too fantastic to find it credible. However, a few of the old hunters remembered strange stories about the dark forest. They also recalled a name that was almost lost to legend. The Ghost Witch, with weapons in hand, a number of men went to the Mi'kmaq wife to the haunted grove. There, the troop found her husband laying in a burial tree. All could see that his heart was gone. The shaken men looked up and saw the body of the dead witch high above. The bravest men in their number climbed the burial tree and took the cursed body down. Then they carefully removed the tattered blankets and robes that covered the body. To their shock and horror, they discovered that the mouth of the decapitated corpse was covered in fresh blood. The men burned the witch's body in a long a large bonfire, and for good measure they burned down the burial tree as well. From that day forth, the old forest was a little brighter and cleaner. Shadows no longer unseen and unwholesome animals once returned to the grove. As for the poor wife, none really know what became of her. Some say that she returned home to the lands of the Mi'kmaq and remarried. It was even said that she lived out the rest of her days in peace. However, most of the old people knew that the story was a fairy tale. The elders believed that any dealings with a witch, living or dead, could always result in a lifetime of nightmares. So, the Banshee is also known as the Little Washerwoman, or the Hag of the Black Head, or Hag of the Mist, among many other names. So, this creature known as the Banshee is a fairy woman who is a spirit linked to the realm of the dead, and if you spot her, you'd be praying for the safety of your family, because it is likely that one of them is soon going to be doomed to join her in the realm of the dead. The name itself, Banshee, is derived from the old Irish word for woman of the fairy mound. Her name is connected to the various mounds of earth dotted around the Irish countryside known as the Tamoli. These Tamoli traditionally covered a grave or a number of graves and were said to be home of spirits of the dead. The Little Washerwoman comes from tales of her being sighted washing blood stains from the clothes of individuals who were soon to die. Even if you don't spot her, the Banshee could signal her arrival by, as we said before, the ominous shrieking, wailing, or keening. Her shrieking was said to be able to shatter glass. Now, the first accounts of this creature date back as far as 1380, and mentions of the Banshee can even be found in some Norman literature from the time. There are also similar tales of witch-like creatures signaling impending doom in Scottish and Welsh mythology as well. Now, the Banshee would typically appear in three forms, either a young maiden, often to lure people towards her with her sweet singing, similar to that of mermaids in their siren songs, or a full-figured matron or an old wretched crone. Whether her form, she would be dressed in a gray cloak and her eyes were permanently red due to constant weeping. She was a predictor of death and would often appear before someone entered a situation where it was unlikely that they would come out alive. There are old tales of battles being abandoned by soldiers because of hearing wailing in the woods just before tussling with their enemies. Terrified by the thought of the Banshee signaling their impending death, they would flee. Fleeing soldiers would usually be killed by their enemies, their own armies for desertion, or simply by the elements if they had stayed in their hiding. And with every death, the legend of the Banshee would grow and grow. Shrieks from the forest were never pleasant, even in the 21st century, with our now rational minds. But whenever you hear a blood-curdling howl, there is welcome that you or your loved ones would be in the arms of death if you can imagine the Banshee quickly becoming one of the most feared and featured creatures in Irish folklore. So tell me, everybody, have you ever seen or heard the wail of the Banshee? Let me know down in the comments. Let's see, who's next on our list? And once again, I take you guys to America again. This is an entity known as the Ghost Witch from the Mi'kmaq Native American tribes, among other Native American tribes as well. Now, what I have for you guys right here is more of a story explaining what the Ghost Witch is. So let me begin. Once, in days long since past, an old sorcerer of some note died of old age. In his long, unnatural life, he had become a vindictive and petty man. Any slight, real or imagined, was repaid tenfold. In his day, he became feared all throughout the Dawnlands. When he passed away, there were no friends or colleagues to attend to his body. What few relatives he had only wrapped him in blankets and placed his body in an old, gnarled tree deep in the heart of a black forest. In time, the forest became a place of dread. People saw strange things fleeting in and out of the trees on moonlit nights. Hunters heard terrible sounds echoing from the burial grove. Eventually, men and women came to shun the whole unwholesome place altogether. Now, several years later, a Mi'kmaq man and his wife were traveling through the lands on their way to the east. They did not know many people in those parts, so instead of asking for a night's lodging, they decided to sleep under the stars, looking for a good place to spend the night. They stole the old forest and stepped foot into that dark grove. When they entered, a chill took a hold of the wife, and she questioned her husband about the night's stay. He merely laughed at his wife's fears and attributed them to superstition. The husband selected a large tree and built a small lean-to. He then prepared a fire and cooked their supper. When their supper was over, the wife carefully studied their surroundings. It was winter, and most of the trees were bare. Dark and twisted branches seemed to stretch out and claw at the moon. Looking up, the wife saw dark shapes hanging amongst the trees. When she questioned her husband, he slippily replied, "They're only the bodies of the deceased, but you shouldn't fear the dead. It's living out here in the weirwood that we have to be mindful of. Come, it's time to sleep." "We shouldn't be here. I think we had better leave now," replied the wife. The husband merely laughed at his wife, then rolled over to his side and fell asleep. The wife sat staring at the crackling fire and wished with all her might that she and her husband were far away and anywhere but here. The night air had grown heavy, and it seemed to the wife that the eyes of the dark forest were upon her. At last, she too lay down beside the fire, but she could not sleep. As the night stretched on, the fire burned down with two glowing embers. She gently prodded her husband, but he did not respond. She did not dare to get up to gather firewood to this dark place, so she wrapped herself in her blanket and shut her eyes. It was not long after she began to hear a gnawing sound. At first, she convinced herself it wasn't merely the old tree rubbing against each other in the wind, or maybe it was a small animal gnawing at the bones on one of the dead. The wife stayed awake the entire time and quietly listened to the strange grating sound that seemed to be lasting for hours. Just when it seemed that she could take no more of the gnawing, it stopped. The wife breathed a sigh of relief and noted that the brightening eastern sky as dawn approached slowly. The wife reached out to wake her husband, but he did not stir, so she let him be. When the sun's golden rays had finally banished the shadows of the old forest, the wife roughly shook her husband by his shoulder. To her horror, she rolled him to his back and saw a face frozen in fear. He was dead, and the left side of his chest was ruined in a mass of blood and viscera. The wife screamed and screamed and screamed, half mad with terror. She then ran with all her might to a lodge of the and she tried to tell her story, but her words were incoherent and jumbled. the Abenaki weren't at first thought she were mad, but they were gentle and tried to best calm her nerves. Eventually, the wife was able to tell the gathering of her harrowing tale. Many would not believe her. This story was too fantastic to find it credible. However, a few of the old hunters remembered strange stories about the dark forest. They also recalled a name that was almost lost to legend. The Ghost Witch, with weapons in hand and a number of men, went to the Mi'kmaq wife to the haunted grove. There, the troop found her husband laying in a burial tree. All could see that his heart was gone. The shaken men looked up and saw the body of the dead witch high above. The bravest men in their number climbed the burial tree and took the cursed body down. Then they carefully removed the tattered blankets and robes that covered the body. To their shock and horror, they discovered that the mouth of the decapitated corpse was covered in fresh blood. The men burned the witch's body in a large bonfire, and for good measure they burned down the burial tree as well. From that day forth, the old forest was a little brighter and cleaner. Shadows no longer unseen and unwholesome animals once returned to the grove. As for the poor wife, none really know what became of her. Some say that she returned home to the lands of the Mi'kmaq and remarried. It was even said that she lived out the rest of her days in peace. However, most of the old people knew that the story was a fairy tale. The elders believed that any dealings with a witch, living or dead, could always result in a lifetime of nightmares. Our next entity is from the American Southwest. This is an entity you may or may not have heard of. It's been made more famous due to the 2019 movie, The Curse of La Llorona, or The Weeping Woman. Now, the Weeping Woman has been a part of Hispanic culture in the Southwest since the days of the conquistadors. The tall, thin spirit is said to be blessed with unnatural beauty and long, flowing black hair. She wears a white gown and roams the rivers and creeks, wailing into the night, searching for children to drag, screaming and crying all the way into a watery grave. No one really knows for sure when exactly the legend of the La Llorona began or where it came from originally, though the tales vary from source to source. The common thread is that she was the spirit of a doomed mother who drowned her children and spends eternity searching for her children in rivers and lakes. Now, La Llorona in her lifetime was christened the name Maria, who was born to a peasant family in a very humble village. Her startling beauty captured the attention of both the rich and the poor men of the area. She was said to have spent her days in her humble peasant surroundings, but she would don her best white gown in the evenings to thrill the men who admired her at the local fandangos. The young man anxiously awaited her arrival, and she revealed the attention she received. However, Maria had two small sons that made it difficult for her to spend her evenings out and often let them alone when she was conversing with a gentleman during the evenings. One day, the two small boys were found drowned in the river. Now, some say they drowned through her neglect, but others say they may have died by her own hand. Another legend says that La Llorona was a caring woman full of life and love, who married a wealthy man who lavished her with gifts and attention. However, after she bore him 2 sons, he began to change, returning to a life of womanizing and alcohol, often leaving her for months at a time. He seemingly no longer cared for the beautiful Maria, even taking without leaving her to marry a woman of his very own wealthy class. When he did return home, it was only to visit his children, and the devastated Maria began to feel resentment towards the boys. One evening, as Maria was strolling with her children on a shady pathway near the river, her husband came by in a carriage with an elegant lady beside him. He stopped and spoke only to his children and completely ignored Maria, and then drove off in the carriage without even looking back. After seeing this, Maria went into a terrible rage and turned to her children and seized them and threw them into the river. As they disappeared downstream, they realized that she had done and ran down to the bank to save them, but it was too late. Maria broke down into inconsolable grief, running into the streets, screaming and wailing. The beautiful La Llorona mourned them day and night. During this time, she would not eat, and she would walk among the riverbanks in her white gown, searching for her boys endlessly, hoping that they would come back to her. She cried endlessly as she roamed the riverbanks, and her gown became soiled and torn. When she refused to eat, she became thinner and appeared taller, until she looked like a walking skeleton. Still a young woman, she finally died on the riverbanks. Not long after her death, her restless spirit began to appear walking along the banks of Santa Fe River. When darkness fell, her weeping and wailing became a curse of the night, and people began to be afraid to go out after dark. She was said to have been seen drifting between the trees and the shoreline, or floating on the current with her long white gown spread out on the waters. On many a dark night, people would see her walking around the riverbank crying for her children, and said they no longer spoke to her as Maria, but rather the La Llorona, the weeping woman. Children are warned not to go out after dark, for La Llorona might snatch them, throwing them to their deaths into the flowing waters. Although the legends vary, the apparition is said to act without hesitation or mercy. The tales of her cruelty depends on the version that you hear. Some say that she kills indiscriminately. She may kill a woman or a man and children, whoever is foolish enough to get close to her. Some say she is very barbaric and kills only children, dragging them screaming into a watery grave. So that is the tale of La Llorona. Our next creature that we're going to be talking about comes all the way from Germany. This is a vampiric creature, the shroud-eating vampires of Germanic folklore. So our next vampiric creature is called the Nachtseher, and the Nachtseher is from northern Germany. The Nachtseher is also known as a shroud eater, a type of German vampire. According to legend, it's needed to devour both its burial shroud and its own body in order to survive. The word Nacht may be translated into English as after, whilst Zayler may be translated into as living off. This combination of words alludes that the Nachtseher is believed to be a creature that lives after death or a being that lives off of humans even after its death. Apart from being from northern Germany, tales of the Noxer and similar creatures are said to exist in folklore such as Bavaria and northern Poland. According to folklore, the most common way that people can become Noxers is when they commit suicide. It's also believed that occasionally this creature is created when a person dies accidentally. Yet another version of the tale associates a Noxer with sickness and disease. According to this tale, when a large number of people die as a result of a plague, the first person to have succumbed to this disease would be transformed into a Noxer. Once a dead person becomes a Noxer, it's believed that it would begin with eating its own burial shroud. Once this item is completely consumed, it would then consume its own flesh. According to one version of the story, it's during that time that members of the deceased person's family will begin to feel weak physically as the Noxer is feeding on their life force. Alternatively, it's believed that the Noxer would only commence feasting on its family once it is finished eating itself. It's been suggested that the idea of a corpse eating itself may not be far-fetched as it seems at first glance. If a body were to be left in an open grave, as it were back in the day, it's not unlikely that scavengers would eat its flesh. If people have not seen the scavengers, or are unaware that the scavengers exist, it's possible that they have speculated that the corpses were eating themselves when it came across partially eaten bodies. Now, when it comes to killing a Noxer, it seems that the Noxer can be easily identified. According to tradition, the vampire lies in its coffin in rather than a particular manner. One of its thumbs must be held in the other hand, and its left eye is always to be open. In addition, the Noxer is believed to be a rather noisy creature. The noise that it makes whilst eating its burial shroud or its body can be heard by people passing its grave. Once the vampire is found, it can't be destroyed. One of the most common ways to get rid of this German vampire is to have it decapitated. Alternatively, one could take precautions to ensure that the deceased did not return from the grave in the first place, but the transformation is inevitable to stop it from gaining strength. The solution to this problem seems to be pretty simple. Since the Noxer need to devour its own shroud and body to survive, one could stop it by doing so by placing a stone in the head of the person's mouth, or by driving spikes into his mouth, his or her mouth. In some extreme cases, the body is even decapitated. So that was the northern German vampire known as the Noxer. One of my favorite vampiric creatures, if I do say so myself. Not talked about a lot, but still equally fascinating. So let's see who's next on our list here. Now we're going to travel from Germany all the way to Japan for the Yamalba. Now, the Yamalba is a creature, or a witch, rather, that lurks in the mountains of Japan. So, if you're planning on hiking in the mountains, you may want to rethink that. The mountain witch is around. These decrepit hags, depicted as old women with messy hair and filthy kimonos, are known to offer shelter to weary travelers, only to kill them once they fall asleep. The Yamalba were once regular women, but fled into the forest after being accused of crimes. One theory was that they were victims of abandoning an old woman. During these hard times, such as famine, a family could leave their elderly in the forest to die. Here they would grow angry and resentful, becoming cannibalistic and practicing black magic. However, in some stories they are benevolent. For example, Yamalba might give a kind exchange of treasure or good fortune. In the Alchi, Yamalba are seen as protective spirits. Moving on to our next entity or star of the show, I hope you guys are enjoying tonight's episode. Don't forget to leave a like or comment if you have any ideas for any future episodes or a creature or spooky ghost, fairy woman, or whatever you want to call it, a vampire from another world. Whatever you have to say, leave it down in the comments. If we miss something particularly interesting, leave a comment down below. I love to learn about new things. Our next creature that we're going to be talking about is from the Slavic states, or countries, I rather say. The Rusalka is the mythical Slavic mermaid. That's right, I said mermaid. In Slavic mythology, the Rusalka is something akin to the Celtic mermaids or the Greek sirens. So, in short, Rusalki are beautiful young women who dwell in bodies of water, and they really enjoy enticing men. The concept of Rusalki originated from a Slavic pagan tradition where the young women would wear symbols of fertility. These nymphs did not interfere too much with human life and mainly served to provide life-giving moisture to the fields and forests in every spring when they came ashore to dance in the spring moonlight. The water spirits are believed to help crops grow plentifully and are generally treated with respect. But in the modern era, a large mythos, mostly unrelated to fertility, has sprung up around the beguiling young women of the water. In the 19th century, the main objective of the Rusalka had transformed into harassing the human population. While the pagan water nymph occurred naturally, the mermaid Rusalka was quite varied origin. Typically, they involved young women dying violent deaths. Sometimes it was murder, other times it was suicide, but usually it is a death by drowning. Stories of Rusalka often revolve around women betrayed by a husband or a lover. Some Rusalki are young women who jumped into a lake or a river because they were pregnant out of wedlock. Other origin stories say a Rusalka was any young woman who dies a virgin, regardless of whether the death was violent or natural. Still, other myths say that babies who die before being baptized are reborn as water sprites. This version ties in with the idea that babies born out of wedlock were supposedly drowned. Finally, some myths claim that Rusalka is an unclean soul, any unclean soul. In other words, anyone who kills himself or herself by jumping into the lake or river. So that was a very unique one I wanted to add right into our list of entities. A mermaid. And our next entity or creature that we have here is another water-dwelling creature from Scotland. This is the Nuckalavy in the definition of pure evil. Now, the Nuckalavy, its name supposedly meaning devil of the sea, is a creature from Orcadian folklore. The name is a later corruption of the Accord of another Orcadian name. The Nuckalavy is the most malevolent of the demons in and around the Scottish Isles without any redeeming characteristics. In summer months, it is restrained in the depths of the ocean by the deity known as the Mither of the Sea, a unique and solitary creature possessing intensive evil powers. It can influence events throughout the islands. The Nekalevi's breath is so bad and toxic that it could wither crops and cause a drought and cause diseases and plague in livestock and humans. The Nekalevi hates the smell of burning seaweed to create kelp. This will enrage Nekalevi, sending it into a fit of rage. Now once it's enraged, it can kill fields of cattle, and the only person who can stop him is the Mither of the Sea. Now, Nekalevis are strongly built and stand nearly 6 feet tall at their horse head and about 9 feet at their humanoid head, with a weight of roughly 2,000 pounds. He resembles a horse whose legs are part fin and like a fish, with a single giant eye that burns bright red like a flame. The human with a large head is merged along with the back of a horse body, like a strange centaur. This most gruesome detail of his appearance is the fact that he has no skin. Black blood courses through his yellow veins, and a pale sinews and powerful muscles are visible with pulsating mass. Some reports claim that he is simply a very large head with two small arms, with all the characteristics that we already mentioned. Now, the evil Nekalevi has an aversion to fresh water, and those who are chased by him only have to cross a stream to get rid of him. It will not come ashore when it is raining, because rain is essentially fresh water. Alright, and that brings us primarily to the end of our episode for Demimonde Paranormal. But before we go, I just want to tell you guys about a couple little famous hauntings, just because it is a Halloween episode, so we might as well go all out. So to end tonight's episode, I thought I would tell you guys about a couple famous hauntings from around the United States. Our first location is in New York, New York. This is known as the Merchant House Museum. It's the only preserved and intact family home from the 19th century in all of New York City. It makes sense that this house has also been the source and subject of many ghost stories. Now, it was the Treadwell family that lived here for over 100 years, and the last family occupant was Gertrude, the youngest daughter, who died in the home in 1933. To this day, staff, visitors, and even passersby say they experienced weird, disembodied things here. It's said that you can catch an apparition out of the corner of your eye, or even hear children playing in empty rooms with creaking floorboards. Moving on to our next location, which is the Mizpah Hotel in Tonopah, Nevada. In 1907, Mizpah Hotel opened as one of the first luxury hotels in Nevada. With a rich history and elaborate decor, the hotel is best known for its legend of the Lady in Red. While the date remains unclear, the story goes like this. A woman was murdered in her room on the fifth floor. Some say it was a jealous ex-boyfriend, while others say the Lady in Red had been caught cheating by her husband, and he killed her in a jealous rage. Those who have stayed in the hotel say that the Lady in Red whispers in men's ears and leaves pearls from her broken necklace on guests' pillows. Our next location is the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. In 1937, millionaire inventor Norman G. Baker posed as a doctor and turned the hotel into a hospital that he said could cure cancer. Now, it was Norman G. Baker who had a fetish for purple and painted many sections of the hospital in the color, and today, the chimneys remain the same color. In addition to wearing purple shirts and ties, he drove a purple car as well. People came from all over with hopes for their cancer to be cured or even treated, but many who arrived at the hotel or the hospital had died. Eventually, Barker was exposed and ran out of town, and today the property is still an active hotel. It's said to be haunted by several ghosts, including a bearded man wearing Victorian clothing and a 5-year-old little girl. And that about does it for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it, as I enjoyed relaying all these ghost tales and spooky happenings of folklore and mythology to you guys tonight. Halloween is on Monday for all you people in the United States. Happy Halloween. I hope you have a great and safe time. Eat lots of candy and nice treats. Watch a creepy movie or even listen to another episode from Demimonde Paranormal. We've got quite a few. And with that being said, stay safe, make good choices, be kind to one another, and I'll see you again real soon. And as always, stay spooky.